All right. Well, let's move on with it. We've got so many talks to get through today. I kind of don't want to spend too much time in between trying to tell any stories or anything. So let's just get straight onto it. Our next speaker is very, very influential in the Bitcoin Cash community, Emergent Reasons, otherwise known as The General. He's co-founder of General Protocols and was heavily involved in BCHN and also the creation of Flipstarter, which, as we were hearing about earlier today, has made a huge impact on the scene. Really can't be understated. He's a perpetual voice of reason and stability. He's been around, been in a lot of wars. I think that's part of why he got the name, and he always comes out a winner in the end. So representing Japan, we have John Nyeri with his talk, Protect Your Stack.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you. All right, thanks, Jeremy. I appreciate that. So, yeah, I have a very technical talk for you guys today. But I think there's a little bit in here for anybody who's attending, so I hope you will enjoy it and get a good message out of this. I'm going to do something I probably most people don't like, but I'm going to be giving you some advice that you didn't ask for. But I hope that you guys will listen to it and maybe agree with me, so let's see how it goes. The thing I want you to take away from this, there's a bunch of points here, but they all fit together. So BCH contracts, I'm going to be talking about, right, protect your stack. This is about programming smart contracts. So the main people to think about here is people who are making smart contracts or apps that use smart contracts. And as you could see yesterday and talking at the session yesterday and then today, there's like an explosion of apps starting to happen. It's just beginning. There's going to be even more going forward. You saw everything that happened in Matthew's presentation, this enormous amount of growth. So I'm hoping that this will give a good framing for how to approach those apps. So BCH contracts are very powerful, and we're barely scratching the surface of what you can do with them. And we're going to see more and more powerful ideas, and as Jack showed us, crazy ideas and interesting new things that people haven't seen before. There's a very common software development methodology that is used all over the place. It's move fast and break things. And this works very well in a lot of cases, in a lot of places, a lot of applications. Smart contracts is not the place to do this. So I'm going to show you why it's not the place to do that and how to do better. So there's three steps that I'm going to teach you from what we have learned, and I'm going to ask you to do even better than this. So the first step is describe contract execution, safety, and I'll show you what safety means, and an input guarantees. I'll explain all that later. Once you've done all that, you confirm in a formal way, as formally as you can, whether by hand or with some tools, that your input guarantees ensure safety. I'll show you what that means. And at the end, you have to actually document your safety and your guarantees into a library or some way, a specification that lets the whole world use your contract in a safe way. So why should you listen to this? We have the AnyHedge contract, which maybe you guys saw yesterday, and this has dealt with, this is old number. Since I made these slides, it's already up to almost 400,000 BCH of contracts, and not one of these has failed or fallen apart. Similar to this conference, which has so far not fallen apart also, Jonathan was responsible for a lot of this. So thank you, Jonathan. Yes, so we've done a lot of work, and I think we have a little bit of proof of work to show that there's something behind what I'm going to ask you to do. And I'm also sharing here all these things. You can come back to these slides. They'll be shared somewhere, or you can take a picture, whatever. And all of these resources will show you exactly what I'm talking about, because what I'm talking about today goes into quite a bit of depth, and there's no way that we can get into the full depth of it, but I'll show you the kind of the surface level of it, and you can get into more later. There's the app, which, of course, I hope you will use. There's the contract, which shows you what a cash script contract looks like. Thank you, Roscoe, Matthew, everyone, for working on that. There's the library, which is the part that I said before. You don't want people working with raw contracts. You give them a way to interact with the contract. That's the library. You can see that, how it works. There's the analysis, which is most of what I'm going to cover in this presentation. That's this repository, which shows you how to do the analysis that I'm showing. And this Z3 solver, where you can read about the tool that I'm using to do it. And a special shout out down here to Tobias Ruck, who introduced me to Z3 and all of this kind of thought process several years ago. So thank you to him for introducing us. So I want you to do better than this also. I don't want you to think that I'm trying to tell you the right way to do things. I'm trying to tell you a good way to do things. And I'm absolutely sure that other people will do better than me, better than we have done. So please listen to this, think about it carefully, and then go to bitcoincashresearch.org, go on development forums, wherever it is, you know, talk about it, try to find your own way, and let's keep getting better at all of this. So getting on to the first point, Move Fast and Break Things works excellent, works very well in many places, like I said, but when we're talking about money, in custodial systems with money also, you can still move fast and break things in a lot of cases because those systems can be erased. You make a mistake, you send the wrong money to the wrong person, whatever it is you do, a lot of those mistakes can just be wiped out and say, that didn't happen. But Bitcoin, of course, is an immutable ledger. Once you make a mistake, once you've locked up somebody's money, you don't get to undo that. And trust is something that is lost very easily. It's very hard to build trust. It's extremely, exponentially easier to lose trust. So take this stuff seriously when you're dealing with people's money. To make this more specific, these are real examples. I don't have the transactions here, but these are real examples. You can have a contract that does some kind of calculation. Two people are doing a deal, and the end result of it is, okay, we're going to pay Bob 15 satoshis, right? 0.000 whatever, 15 BCH. That's not possible. That's not going to work. This contract has decided something that it needs to pay out, and this isn't possible because the network is not going to relay this. 15 isn't enough. There's a minimum limit for outputs. So your contract has now frozen somebody's money, and their money is stuck in there. In this case, you can actually pay a miner to say, like, hey, we screwed up. Could you help us out? And the miner could actually solve this one. But the second one, a miner can't help you here. Your contract does something silly, calculates a minus 15 sats output, and your user's funds are frozen forever. They're never coming out of there. Unless Greg or Luke Jr. or someone gets a hold of your consensus. So be very careful. Don't move fast and break things in this case with smart contracts. What I'm going to show you is the goal in three easy steps. We want to describe your contract, what it does, how it works in a formal way. And I'll show you. After you've described it, this is the description here, the input guarantees, contract execution, and safety. And once you've described it, then you need to use some kind of formal analysis to say, yeah, what you said is true, that the way that you've set things up is safe, is actually true. So you use a formal analysis tool to confirm that that works. And the third part is, as we discussed, you put it into a library, you put it into a specification so that everyone can use it in a safe way. Here's where we get into the tech part, so enjoy. The describe your contract execution. This is the first step. It's the middle step here, but this is the first thing you need to do. You need to describe what your contract does in a formal way. So really, it's not that complicated. There's a bunch of lines here. But all this is I've taken the cash script contract and I've converted it into a formal description of what the contract does. So the contract does A plus B. You describe that with a formal system that says, okay, X equals A plus B. That's it. It's not really very complicated. You just have to describe what your contract does using the formal language. That's it. So you describe your contract. Yes, so after you've described the contract, this is the really where you're starting to get harder in the steps, what you need to do. You describe, what does safety mean? for your contract. You know, just a minute ago I showed you, you do the wrong thing and you pay out 15, failed. You pay out minus 15, jail. So here's an example here that I've shown. Dust must be, so short sats out. This is like saying the payout to the user. You know, in any hedge contract, there's a short side and a long side. The payout to the short side must be between dust and some maximum amount. Like if you're going to say, you know, maximum amount is 1,000 BCH in a contract or 10,000 BCH. It has to be between those two numbers. That's it. You just got to describe. What does safety mean for that? If this number goes down to 15, then my system should say, that's not safe. You've done something wrong. That shouldn't be possible. If you allow this input, then you're not going to be able to ensure safety. You're not going to be able to achieve that goal of guaranteeing that this contract always works. And there's other rules here. The long side has the same rule. The price that you get, you do some processing on the price, and then it has to be between a minimum price and a maximum price. So whatever price you get, it can't ever go outside of that range. If it does, if something you've done in your contract allows that to happen, you've failed. There's a lot of ways to fail here. So this is safety. You have to describe at every level. Now, one thing that you can't see here, but you'll see if you go into the AnyHedge, to the validator library that I've shared with you, every step means you can't just look at the beginning and the end of the contract. You have to literally go through every step of the contract execution and make sure you think, okay, when it adds these two numbers, what is the restrictions on this one and this one? And what's the restrictions on the output? You have to think very carefully about every single step. And it's not very complicated, but you have to think about it. And you have to actually work it all out and come up with what safety means at every step. Because if your input and you have some formula and then the output, if the input and the output look safe, okay, fine. But in the intermediate part, maybe you overflow an integer or something in the middle part. So the end result was safe, but in the middle there was one little thing that didn't go according to the virtual machine limits. Your whole contract is broken, right? It's not safe anymore. So you have to look at every step. So we've described what the contract does. We've described everything from the beginning to the end, every step. What does it mean for every step to be safe? The last part, and this part is very open-ended. You can do a kind of formal analysis to come up with it, or you can do it by hand. You can just kind of intuit what it means, but you have to describe, what am I going to guarantee when people use my library or this contract? What do I need to guarantee in order for all this to work? So an example here is the start price. So start price is that you have to have something. You say start price is there. It has to be between the minimum price. High liquidation price has to be there, and the maximum is the max price. So this is just a simple relationship that you have to make sure is true. And if anybody uses your system and they try to make a contract, hey, so the start price is going to be minus 5, and the minimum price is 0 or 1, it says, no, stop. Don't make this contract. That's not a valid way to use this contract. So the contract by itself can't be safe. You have to make sure to have this layer of input guarantees that makes the usage of your contract safe. So once you've done all these three parts, you said, what does your contract do? What does it mean to be safe? And what guarantees am I going to provide? You provide these three parts, and you throw them into a box, the Z3 system or whatever it is that you want to use. I'm sure there's other ways to do it. And now it's going to say, okay, this is a simple logic. We say, I'm going to say what the input guarantees are. This is what I guarantee you is going to be true. How the contract works. We say this is true and this is true. This is combination. Therefore, the contract is safe according to your definition of safe. So you have done a good job on these two. So this is a simple logic assertion. A and B, therefore C. And you tell the formal solver, hey, this is true. And the formal solver says, really? Is it? And then the formal solver is going to do its magic, and it's going to check, and it's going to find exceptions. And you're going to say, oh, shit, I didn't think of that. So it's going to find exceptions, and you're going to have to come back here, and say, oh, yeah, okay, well, this number also has to be greater than that. And then it'll say, oh, good job, yeah, it's safer now, but you forgot about this. And it'll find something else that you didn't think about. It'll find edge cases for you that you would not have thought about. I promise you, it will find you edges that you didn't think about. So it'll find these edges for you, and you keep upgrading your inputs, or maybe you realize, oh, this is a dangerous way to do it. I might need to change the design of the contract or something like that. So you'll go through some iterations with it. And at the end of it, you will have the solver, the formal analysis will tell you, yeah, I couldn't find any way to break it. I couldn't find any single case of all the things that I checked, all the boundaries that I looked at, where it's possible for this contract to not be safe. And that's where you want to get. You want to get to that point. So now you're somewhat confident that that things are going to work well with your contract if you achieve all these things. That's where you want to get. Once you've done that, like I said, it's not very complicated. You take all those input guarantees that you came up with, and you put them into some kind of library or specification, and that's going to package it up, and then you tell your users, if you work with this contract, with this smart contract by yourself, you're on your own. That's on you if you do that. But if you work with it through my specification or my library, then it's going to be safe. And here's why it's going to be safe. And you can show them, right? They can go verify it for themselves that this contract is going to be safe, and they're going to be safe, and their users are going to be safe. Yes, so not that complicated here. That's it. So once you've done all these things, please go back and keep in mind, right? The things that you're building are things that potentially will be used by thousands, millions, eventually billions of people. So please keep that in mind, right? We have to be ambitious and assume that we're going to be successful. So assume that you're going to be successful and do all this very carefully. Work on it very hard and try to make sure that your users will be safe. Move fast and break things everywhere, but on your smart contracts. Don't lose people's money in smart contracts, please. The steps that you need to do is describe your contract execution, what your contract does, describe what safety means, describe what guarantees you're going to provide. Confirm that the input guarantees that you gave to them actually imply safety. Once you've done that, wrap everything up, and you're golden. That's it.
Do we have any questions? Yes.
The middle step where you define the execution.
Yes.
Is there anything CashScript could do to make that step easier for people who need to do this analysis and validation?
This part, right? Yeah, maybe. It's really, this is the easy part, honestly, because these formal systems are really just, you just kind of take exactly what you wrote. Like if you look in that repository that I shared for validators, this is the easy part. It just literally says, this is CashScript line 3, where it does this, and then you just put the same thing in the solver. So yeah, maybe if there was some kind of integration, it could probably automatically spit out that kind of language for you and then say, okay, yeah, you're right. So it could spit that out and then give you a box which says, so where are your guarantees? What guarantees are you going to put on this? And maybe even the compiler could... The compiler could do a lot of the safety step as well, because it could look at every step. It knows every step, like in opcode terms. These are the things that need to happen. These are the ranges for these values. It could probably spit out both of these for you. Yeah, there we go. Let's offload all of this to Roscoe and Machu. We need another flip starter for this. Yeah, good question. It would help. It would be nice.
You got another question?
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. It was really helpful to see what safety looks like in terms of any hedge. So my question is about with cash tokens. I think, yeah, we will need to think about safety a lot. But how, for example, if I have a contract which need to be set up with a minting NFT and it mints some token, a receipt, but I want to make sure only one receipt can be minted. Like, do you think the formal systems can reason about these things in the transaction structure, like that only one NFT can be minted, for example? Or is there a different testing structure needed, for example, with Mocknet and using a transaction builder? So which kinds of things do you validate through the Z3 solver, and which kind of things do you use, like just tests on Mocknet for?
Yeah, you're going to have to do better than me. So, yes, you could actually absolutely reason about those with this type of system, right? It's just the scope of it is going to grow from what we're doing now, from what I did here with AnyHedge, which is relatively simple and doesn't involve any cash tokens. You have to expand the scope of it and say, like, just like you said, okay, for these transactions, you have to guarantee that this is on the zeroth input and this is on the third output or something like that. And if you're composing two contracts and it would tell you... both of these have to be on the zeroth input, that's impossible. That kind of thing, it will be able to catch that kind of thing. If you describe it in formal terms, it will be able to, yes.
Do we have one more? Yep.
Did you learn about the need for the safety system the hard way? Is there a backstory?
Not really. There's an unlimited number of 5-cent contracts that have just strewn across the BCH blockchain as we were learning how to make all this. But we knew from the beginning that this was very important. And I have done all this by hand before I learned how to do it with a formal solver. So I have pages and pages of where I've described every step of a contract, every boundary at every step of the contract, and then you backpropagate those from the end back to the beginning and how they all interact. Yeah, pages and pages of it. So we did a lot of this from the beginning, but this makes it infinitely easier to do. Yes.
Thank you for all that work, especially the by hand part. Some of us were made to read it. Anyway, I just want to add one thing. Like having AnyHedge as a starting point was actually kind of a lower bar because AnyHedge contracts are independent. Like each one is independent, so you can guarantee the inputs on the library level, and if someone don't want to follow the library and the spec, then they screw up their own money, right? It gets even worse if you try to pull all your liquidity onto one UTXO, and then you interact with it results in another UTXO. Then if somebody screw up, they screw up the entire pot. Mm-hmm. So you need to find some way to enforce it in script, and that gets even worse. So yeah, good luck.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I don't expect this to be any kind of a gold standard. This is really just a starting point of, I hope we can take all this seriously and keep developing these formal analysis methods. Because a lot of the formal analysis you'll see from other ecosystems, when I looked into it, a lot of what they called formal analysis was not formal analysis. It was pretty shallow in EVM. I'm sure there's people who do extremely deep level work, like better than this. But a lot of what I saw was not at all formal analysis. So yeah, I'm hoping that we get off to a good start and start on a very good foot.
I have a question, which is, this system that you're describing is obviously very mathematical and programmatic, but is there potentially some use case for this for people who aren't developers? So let's say I want to run a conference, right? And I can use sort of a similar system of steps to reason through and guarantee as best as I'm able that every step can't fail, that I have backups in all the right places that I need, and maybe somebody else is the prover software that has to check my work, or maybe a pool of people. Is there a way we could even do it on Bitcoin Cash Research? Somebody can post something and other people can critique. Here's where you're missing something.
Yeah, with the specific things that I'm using here, maybe not. But just as a general rule of us applying these kind of rigorous ideas and just being rigorous in general with each other, right? Like a bit of a scientific method on having high expectations. I think that's going to go a very long way. And BCH ecosystem has already started there with we've got a lot of high expectations. So, yeah, I don't think it would apply directly, but the general approach of doing things carefully and doing things well, I think will translate to a lot of different places.
All right, we got one more question.
So one thing that really struck out to me was you said it's not enough for the contract itself to be safe. We also have to have the input guarantees. Now, at the same time, you were saying that intuition is one of the best ways to make those input, to guess those input guarantees, but you also said analysis. So in terms of the analysis, what kind of steps can we take to make sure that we're realizing the full scope of those guarantees?
So I'm not sure if I got exactly the question, but what I hear is how can you make sure that the steps that you're doing here are really covering everything that needs to be covered? Yeah, that comes from doing this step well. Like, for example, with AnyHedge contract, with the one that you can see in the repository, I don't cover every step of the contract. So, for example, there's things about public key. If you let somebody provide you a public key in a contract as an input, and two people participate and somebody puts a public key and they put in some nonsense like ABC, and you don't check that, straight to jail. So there's other things that you have to check also. You have to be able to, you have to kind of understand what level you're going to. If you really are going for complete full validation, you have to look at every single step of it. But I think the answer to your question is you have to understand how much of your contract are you really going to describe. Because once you've done that, this kind of writes itself, because then you've got all these things that are happening and you have to think about every single step. You know, here's a public key that comes in. Okay, what do you mean by public key? What does that have to look like? It has to be how many bytes? Are there any restrictions on it? I'm not sure if I answered. Did that cover a little bit? I think you have to do this very carefully, and then these kind of lead from doing that well.
All right, this is actually the very last question I've had. We just don't have all the time in the world.
Thank you. I've got a question, and I'm an end user that I tend to use the HODL contract within the Electron Cash wallet. Mm-hmm. So I've got a question as to how do we ensure long-term supportability from, shall we say, the wallet side as well, because we know the contract will do its thing till the end, but how do we ensure that supportability from the wallet side and also probably supportability from the plugins as well? If we're, for example, if I was to say set a 10-year contract, that's quite a long period of time. So I'm just wondering how do we ensure that that's supported through that whole time?
Right. Yeah, that's a good question. Cheap answer to that is look for an organization or team that is making a profit or somehow sustainable, because there's going to be a much higher chance of them moving on into the future and keep doing their thing. So that's a kind of a cheap answer to it. But a detailed answer is you would have to ask someone who knows a little bit of the technical details in these input guarantees. For example, if you require an Oracle or something like that and you're doing a 10-year contract, you better be very sure that those people are going to be operating that Oracle in 10 years' time. But if it doesn't require that, if there's no kind of external requirements and it's just the blockchain and the VM, you're going to be all right. Yeah.
All right. Put your hands together for Emergent Reasons. Well, that's amazing to see. We have so many questions, we don't even have time for them. But John will be around, and I'm sure anyone can catch him with anything that we didn't get to.